Chapter 22. As I came into the operating room, I saw that Siegfried had a patient on the table. He was thoughtfully stroking the head of an elderly and rather woebegone border terrier.
"James," he said,
"I want you to take this dog through to Greer."
"Greer?"
"Vet at Broughton. He was treating the case before the owner moved into our district. I've seen it a couple of times. Stones in the bladder. It needs an immediate operation, and I think I'd better let Greer do it. He's a touchy devil, and I don't want to stand on his toes."
"Oh, I think I've heard of him," I said.
"Probably you have. A cantankerous Aberdonian. Since he practices in a fashionable town, he gets quite a few students, and he gives them hell. That sort of thing gets around."
He lifted the terrier from the table and handed him to me.
"The sooner you get through there, the better. You can see the op and bring the dog back here afterwards, but watch yourself. Don't rub Greer the wrong way, or he'll take it out of you somehow."
At my first sight of Angus Greer, I thought immediately of whiskey. He was about 50, and something had to be responsible for the fleshy mottled cheeks, the swimmy eyes, and the pattern of purple veins which chased each other over his prominent nose. He wore a permanently insulted expression. He didn't waste any charm on me. A nod and a grunt, and he grabbed the dog from my arms. Then he stabbed a finger at a slight, fairish youth in a white coat.
"That's Clinton, final year student. Do you not think there's some pansy-looking buggers coming into this profession?"
During the operation, he niggled constantly at the young man, and in an attempt to create a diversion, I asked him when he was going back to college.
Beginning of next week," he replied.
"Aye, then he's away home tomorrow,"
Greer rasped.
"Wasting his time when he could be getting good experience here."
The student blushed.
"Well, I've been seeing practice for over a month, and I felt that I ought to spend a couple of days with my mother before the term starts."
"Oh, I can. You're all the same. Can I stay away from the titty?"
The operation was uneventful, and as Greer inserted the last stitch, he looked up at me.
"You'll never want to take the dog back till he's out of the anaesthetic. I've got a case to visit. You can come with me to pass the time."
We didn't have what you would call a conversation in the car. It was a monologue. A long recital of wrongs suffered at the hands of wicked clients and predatory colleagues. The story I liked best was about a retired admiral who had asked Greer to examine his horse for soundness. Greer said the animal had a bad heart and was not fit to ride, whereupon the admiral flew into a fury and got another vet to examine the horse. The second vet said there was nothing the matter with the heart and passed the animal sound. The admiral wrote Greer a letter and told him what he thought of him in fairly ripe quarter-deck language. Having got this out of his system, he felt refreshed and went out for a ride, during which, in the middle of a full gallop, the horse fell down dead and rolled on the admiral, who sustained a compound fracture of a leg and a crushed pelvis.
"Oh, man," said Greer with deep sincerity. "Man, I was awful glad."
We drew up in a particularly dirty farmyard, and Greer turned to me.
"I've got a cow to cleanse here."
"Right," I said.
"Fine."
I settled down in my seat and took up my pipe. Greer paused halfway out of the car.
"Are you not coming to give me a hand?"
I couldn't understand him. Cleansing of cows is simply the removal of retained afterbirth, and is a one-man job. "Well, there isn't much I can do, is there?" I said. "And my Wellingtons and coat are back in my car. I didn't realize it was a farm visit. I'd probably get messed up for nothing." I knew immediately that I'd said the wrong thing. The toadskin jowls flushed darker, and he gave me a malevolent glance before turning away. But halfway across the yard, he stopped and stood for a few minutes in thought before coming back to the car.
"I've just remembered. I've got something here you can put on. You might as well come with me. You'll be able to pass me a pessary when I want one."
It sounded nutty to me, but I got out of the car and went round to the back. Greer was fishing out a large wooden box from the boot.
"Here, you can put this on. It's a carving outfit I got a bit ago. I haven't used it much because I found it a mite heavy, but it'll keep you grand and clean."
I looked in the box and saw a suit of thick, black, shining rubber. I lifted out the jacket. It bristled with zip fasteners and press studs and felt as heavy as lead. The trousers were even more weighty, with many clips and fasteners.
The whole thing was a most imposing creation, obviously designed by somebody who had never seen a cow carved, and having the disadvantage that anybody wearing it would be pretty well immobilized. I studied Greer's face for a moment, but the watery eyes told me nothing. I began to take off my jacket. It was crazy, but I didn't want to offend the man. And in truth, Greer seemed anxious to get me into the suit because he was holding it up in a helpful manner. It was a two-man operation.